Okay, alhamdulillah, wassalatu wassalam, rasulillah. All praise due to Allah, may Allah's peace and blessing be on the last messenger of Allah. In the previous class, we looked at separation of the sexes, Islam being spread by the sword, the idea of Muslims having any sex like Christians do. In this class, actually, we'll be looking at the criminal law, Islamic criminal law, you know, which is generally speaking identified as being particularly brutal, you know, because of the fact that the adulterers are stoned to death, fornicators are given 100 lashes, thieves, their hands are cut off at the wrist, you know, those who are caught drinking, drunk, 80 lashes. These are public executions that take place. So this is what we'll be looking at. But before looking at that, one of your classmates has an issue that he'd like to raise for discussion, and that is the issue of homosexuality. From what perspective did you want to look at it? Okay, from an Islamic perspective on homosexuality. First and foremost, now before looking at it, one can look, for example, in Christianity, which precedes Islam, and which Islam holds as being fundamentally the basis of Jesus' teachings were the same teachings that Prophet Muhammad brought. They were both prophets of God, and they taught the same basic teachings. And before both Jesus and Muhammad, may God's peace and blessings be on both of them, there were other prophets, David, Moses, etc., Abraham, and they all taught basically the same teaching. Now in Mosaic law, the law which is well documented in the Torah, in the Old Testament, you know, especially the first five books of the Old Testament is generally referred to as the Torah, you'll find rulings made on homosexuals. And the ruling there is that it is something sinful. It is something where the person who practices it should be killed. Furthermore, the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, which were supposed to have been the towns where Prophet Lot, or Lut in Arabic, was assigned, that those people were destroyed for their deviation. Sodom, the word Sodom came into criminal law as sodomy. Sodomy, which is considered a crime actually, even till today in many countries, sodomy remains something which is known to be something evil, something despicable in society. Literally, sodomy, I don't know if you know what sodomy means. No, no, I'm not going to ask you. I mean, sodomy is you could say, basically defined as anal sex. Right? I mean, this is obviously coming from the part of the male. Particularly in the case of two males, I mean, this would be the practice of homosexuality, right? In the Quran confirms the story of the people of Lot. They're called Qawm Lut. And so in Arabic, Qawm Lut becomes synonymous with homosexual. The word for homosexual generally used is Luti, right? Which literally should mean a follower of Lot, Prophet Lot, but it doesn't. It means a homosexual. And the destruction of the people to whom Prophet Lot was sent is described in the Quran, and it is described there that they preferred, you know, relations amongst the males amongst the males, females amongst the females, instead of male-female relationships. And so it's made clear there that it is an issue of homosexuality. This is the crime for which God destroyed cities. So it is looked at as a sin, a crime. According to Islamic law, one who is caught in the act is executed, according to Islamic law. That's the Islamic view. Yeah, you raised the topic, so you want to... what the modern view, of course, I think we spoke about this before, that this was the general view held by the world up until the last 25 years, when in the West in particular, in England and in America, especially in America, homosexuals joined in the freedom rights movement. I remember I spoke in the previous class about the Black Power movement, where Black Americans were seeking their rights in the 60s, early 60s, they were burning down cities demanding their rights. Now, they got, at least on paper, certain confirmed rights for themselves, and following them was the women's rights movement, because they had joined in and supported this, a number of the groups had joined, and so then their movement came to the forefront. And following the women's rights movement, which was now the late 60s, early 70s women's rights movement, women demanding equal pay for equal work and, protection against male harassment and all these kind of things. Then what followed that was the gay rights movement, they call it. Homosexuals in the Western terminology are referred to as gays, Why gay? I don't know. That's the term which is used. They have different slang terms for it. In England they're called poofters. Where that name came from again, In American terminology they also use the term fag, from faggot, which is the name used to refer to homosexuals. Of course, this is where one has to be also versed in the different terminology, because in England a fag is a cigarette, right? And in America a fag is a homosexual, so you ask your friend, give me a fag, you have to be American so you can put yourself in a very comfortable circumstance, right? Anyway, the point is that, as I said, in general, society looked at homosexuality as a crime. Homosexuals had to stay, as they used to refer to it, as in the closet. You had many people who would pretend to be heterosexual. They got married, they had kids, but really they were homosexual. They had another life, another hidden life, from the society. But in the 70s, they started coming, as I said, out of the closet. More of them started to identify themselves. They were parading in the streets, demanding their rights also. And eventually, they exerted such an influence on Western society, Western politics, that from the medical profession, their illness was removed from the categories of illnesses. And as I think I mentioned it to you before, those people who were opposed to homosexuals were now classified as being ill. Right? Homophobic, right. So, beyond that, it also became necessary, in politics, any politician who expressed any kind of opposition. I remember there was one female politician in Florida, I forgot what her name is, but she had expressed some opposition, and the whole country, went haywire over it. And, eventually she even lost her position in her political position, and she became a sort of lost in the media, no more position, etc. And it came became such an issue that, as we mentioned before, Bill Clinton had to make a commitment to homosexuals for his election. And this is what you're going to find now, since his time, just prior to his time, from there on in, all of the candidates, all the people seeking office, have to openly give their commitment for homosexuals. Just as they have to openly give their commitment for the Jewish cause, so that's a standard. No president of the last 15, 20 years, has gotten in without making open his commitment to protecting the state of Israel. And that's just a part of American politics now. Similarly now, protecting and promoting homosexual rights has become a part of the political scene in America. Beyond that, I mean, of course, if we look at this relative to democracy and the principles of secular democracy, it may seem quite reasonable and quite fair. If the masses of the people agree that it's okay, then what's the problem? Of course, from an Islamic perspective, it's not an issue. We don't decide what is right and wrong according to the opinion of the masses of the people. What God has defined as being wrong or evil remains evil. Right? This is something which is unchangeable. It doesn't change according to Muhammad, please. It doesn't change according to the whims and fancies of the society at any given point in time. So there will never come a time, as far as I could possibly project from an Islamic perspective, there will never come a time where an Islamic society will accept homosexuality as acceptable practice. Now, it may become prevalent, or it may exist in some societies in other forms or in different variations, because to be quite honest, in Saudi Arabia, for example, and I can't speak about the Gulf because I don't know what the situation is here, but I know in Saudi Arabia, you know, there has been over the past years a rise in homosexual activity amongst the Saudis themselves, Saudi youth. I mean, this is not to put down the society or anything like this, because I live there and, you know, I don't have anything, you know, against the society to say, but this is something real, you know, something that cannot be denied, and that may also be the case amongst Emirati youth too, I don't know. But I mean, I know personally because of the fact that, you know, my son, you know, went to school in Arabic school. He did up to his high school in Arabic. And, you know, he used to come back and tell me, you know, different things which were going on in the school. You know, he was approached by, you know, other students, etc., right? And, he made his position very clear. He, you know, broke a few noses, you know, in the process, but it became very clear to people that he wasn't interested in this kind of activity at all. Okay? But the point is that it was there, I mean, on a personal level, but also was there in the society, also known to me in the society, because people also spoke to me about it. I mean, Saudis, youth, etc., spoke to me about it. And I did see a difference between what was taking place there and what may be taking place here, and that which is in, say, America, right, and England and other European countries, where homosexuality is in fact really a choice where a person has other options. They could be heterosexual, there are, you know, you can buy women, it's readily available in the society. You know, the, you know, free love, as it's called, or free sex where people have relations without outside of marriage, is prevalent. So when a person chooses to be a homosexual in America or in England, they're doing it, you know, this is the way of life they have chosen. Now, in places like Saudi Arabia, what has happened because of the fact that in the last 20-25 years, the dowries have soared, you know, gone into huge numbers, where the average youth is not able now to get married as he should have at a reasonable age. And at the same time, the society has opened itself to a heavy level or a high level of sexuality through the media. Through the media, whether it be the magazines or the videos or whatever. So there is a high level of sexuality present in the society on that plane. So youths, a number of them, have taken this particular route to fulfill their desires. Of course, this is in ignorance, in the lack of Islamic instruction. They have taken this route. But the difference is that these same youths, at a certain age, say the age of their late 20s, when they are finally accumulated enough to get married, then in most cases they give up that activity, they get married and carry on. So it's not a way of life chosen as like, this is what I'm going to be, this is what I am, and you know, it is more similar to the people choosing the route of masturbation instead of fasting, as Islam has prescribed for young people who are unable to get married, that they should fast. Now, others, or maybe many, will not take that route. The route of fasting, obviously, is going to be linked to faith. Fasting is going to be linked to faith. Faith, when you fast, when you divide now yourself, food and drink, etc., I mean, this has to do with faith in God. So if as a youth, you know, your faith is shaky, you know, you're Muslim in name or whatever, when these options are put in front of you, then you're not going to choose fasting. So the tendency will be, among a number of the youth, to choose to masturbate instead. And that homosexuality or homosexual activity which comes along with it is linked to this kind of choice based on the pressures which are now put on the youth by the society itself. And also, the rise in, for example, lesbianism, there's been a similar rise in lesbianism. In case you don't know what lesbianism means, do you know? Do I have to define that also? Do you know? Okay, if you know, it's all right. You know. All right, so there's a rise also in lesbianism, you know, because of the fact that, corresponding to the rising dowry, where a number of women are not able to get married, you know, marriage has been delayed, etc., or they may not get married at all. You know, this rise is developing in society. And this has been a response to, as I said, rising dowry. This is one of the major factors. There's also, we could say, in the case of lesbianism too, you know, oftentimes, or in some cases, lesbianism may be a response from bad experiences with males. That, you know, males being insensitive in dealing with females may leave bad impressions on those females who find female companionship in a much more comfortable than male companionship. You want to say something? Fighting? Masturbation is considered by some scholars to be haram. By a majority, it's not haram, but disliked. Something particularly disliked. Yeah. Well, the evidence, there is no clear evidence from the Quran or Sunnah to classify it as haram, right? What there is circumstantial or, deduced rulings in that, you know, Allah, for example, describes in the Surah Ar-Rahman, Ibadur Rahman, right, describing the worshippers of Allah as those who protect their private parts, you know, from abuse or use, except with their wives. So, by saying that, it is implying that any other usage is not an acceptable usage. So they use this as sort of deduced evidence. But I would say in general, we'd have to say that it is something disliked, meaning if you didn't do it, If a person had an urge to do it and they didn't do it, they are rewarded. They are rewarded. God considers that to be an act of righteousness for which you are rewarded. If a person does not control himself or herself and falls into that practice, then it is not sinful, but it is being engaged in something which is disliked to God, and something which could, because the area of makruh, the dislike, this area is an area where a person who involves themselves much in it eventually fall into haram. The area of makruh is sort of like a buffer zone between the halal, you know, the things or the better things and the good things, the recommended, etc., and the prohibited things, the sinful things. Pardon? No, I mean, people give names to it, like nikah al-yad, right? This is some of the terms which are used. Maybe you didn't hear that before. But I, you know, which okay. So such terminology, which means for those. If there's anybody who doesn't know Arabic, there's nobody who knows Arabic here, right? It means literally, you know, marrying your hand, right? This may give the impression, right, that it is similar to zina or fornication. But no, it isn't. Pardon? Huh? No. I mean, the point is that the issue is what? The issue is a question of evidence. As you said, some people say yes, some people say no. In the end, you have to look at what is the evidence. No, because the issue, the category of something being classified as haram is not, you know, an arbitrary category where, you know, it depends on how I feel. I feel this way, so I'm going to call it haram. He feels that way, so he calls it halal. No, it has to do, there are principles behind it. There are legal principles. And to classify something as being haram, it has to have been clearly prohibited by Allah or by... You have to see. Go back. Where did you put the papers, the assessment papers? You gave it all to him, huh? Including the pencils and the others. Okay, so you can see if it's okay to go and pick it up from registration and do it. Or just forget it, you can ask it. We're saying what? Yeah, the point is that defining something as being haram, there are principles behind it. There are principles behind it. It has to have been prohibited in the Quran or in the statements of the Prophet, or some punishment has been assigned to it in Sharia. You know, when the signs of something is haram. Or there is a punishment, not only in Sharia in the sense that in this world there is a punishment, but as a punishment is defined in the next world. You know, a person is going to be in hell because of this, that, and the other. For example, like interest. Dealing in interest, there's no punishment in the Sharia in this world, in this life for it. Nobody's lashed or nobody's, you know, punished for dealing in interest in that way. But in the next life, the Prophet, may God peace and blessings be upon him, described the one who deals in interest as swimming in a lake of blood, you know, and that people will be throwing these rocks into that person's mouth, you know, and something like this, huh? So this is a person who is dealing in interest, okay? And also Prophet has said that interest has over 70 branches, and the simplest of the branches of interest is equivalent to incest, to a man having sex with his mother. You know? So that is indicating for us haram, that this thing is haram. You know? So there has to be some kind of evidence like that. Of course, one may question, for example, in the case of cigarettes. Okay, there's some difference of opinions regarding cigarettes. Is cigarettes haram or is it makruh? You know, it has been ruled as makruh a long time ago. Cigarettes was ruled as makruh. Makruh meaning dislike, as we spoke about. But this ruling was given about 500 years ago. 500 years ago when tobacco first came to the Muslim world, to Turkey, right? We talked about this before?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, this ruling was made then. Today, we have other knowledge which indicates that smoking causes cancer, and we know then that anything which we take which can kill us, according to Islamic law, is prohibited. So, the ruling of haram is now placed on it. It wasn't an arbitrary ruling. It's a ruling based on knowledge, because our knowledge will change in time. So information about a particular product or something like this may cause rulings to change from being harmless to harmful, if harm is defined or founded. To work in insurance. Well, if the system is a, you know, Western-style insurance system, then the process of insurance is itself considered to be haram.
No, I mean insurance cars,
ships, whatever. No, even the insurance of objects, where it is not following Islamic principles, right? Where the insurance is, the monies are gained by way of interest, you know, the monies are put in banks and the interest accrued from that is what increases your overall capital and this is what you're paying out of, then it still remains haram.
What about the people who are dealing with that?
Well, Prophet Muhammad has dealing with that, meaning dealing with the interest dealing. Prophet Muhammad has said that there are four people who are similar in sin in the dealing of interest. Right? He said, the one who pays it, the one who receives it, the one who draws up the contract, and the one who witnesses the contract, signs themselves as a witness.
For example, we have different insurance for our car. Yeah.
Well, as I said, if there are Islamic insurance schemes that are available, you do it through the Islamic insurance scheme. If there are not, and transportation is one of your basic needs in society, right, where the society obliges you to deal with interest through this insurance in order to use a car, then you do it to that degree. So what you do is when you take out coverage, for example, is you don't take out full coverage. You don't take out full coverage. You just take out the minimum. What is the absolute minimum coverage that you can take out to fulfill the requirements of the state with regards to it? Okay, anybody have any other comments they want to make with regards to previous topic, homosexuality? Okay. Break. All right, take your break. Alhamdulillah, wassalatu wassalamu ala rasulillah. Now, the next topic, if any of you didn't have any particular other topic you wanted to raise, I'll go on to the topic of crime and punishment. Crime and punishment. Huh? Did you have another topic you'd like to interject yourself? No? Okay. Okay. This is an issue which is important to you all. We look at it. This has to do with the issue of images, the Islamic prohibition of images. Generally speaking, those looking at Islam from the outside look at it as being very conservative in this matter, the idea of taking images and having images. Especially those who are classified, quote-unquote, as fundamentalists, who are against this issue of images. Now, to understand the issue of images, one has to go back to the previous prophets in the laws which were stated by Prophet Moses, which is supposed to receive from God, that's called the Ten Commandments. Among the Ten Commandments is a clear prohibition of making any images of any living beings. And Prophet Muhammad, may God peace and blessings be upon him, had said that the one who would receive the most severe punishment on the Day of Judgment would be the picture makers, al-musawwirun. He described them as receiving the most severe punishment on the Day of Judgment. Right? And they will be told to put life into the objects that they had created. Okay? Of course, they will not be able to do so. It will be a means of humiliation, that they will be humiliated on the Day of Judgment, in that they will be commanded to bring these things to life, and they will not be able to do so. Now, Prophet Muhammad, may God peace and blessings be upon him, also clarified why there is this prohibition on the making of images. He stated, explaining, there's a chapter in the Quran where reference is made to idols that were worshipped. Wad, Suwa', Ya'ud, Ya'ub, these names are mentioned, I don't know if you read the Quran, you came across them or not. Anyway, the Prophet explained that these, which had become idols worshipped in the time of the Prophet, were originally good people, righteous people in the time of Prophet Noah. The time of Prophet Noah. They were righteous people who were known for their righteousness. And after they died, Satan had come to the people, to their community, and suggested to them to make images of these people to remind them of their righteousness. So it suggested to them to make images, statues, etc., and place them in the places where they used to sit, the gathering places, meeting places, places by their graves, places by the areas that they're known to have contact with people. And with this rationale, that when they do it, and they would see these, it would remind them of these righteous people, and thereby remind them of righteousness. And they did it. And in their time, it used to remind them. They would see the images, they remember the person, and be righteous. However, generations later, when the people, the generations that came afterwards, didn't know what was the purpose any longer of these objects, but just as people gather by these objects, adore these objects, and leave, Satan then came back and introduced to these people that these objects were really worshipped by your forefathers, and it was because of their worship that the rain would come, the crops would be fertile and good, and so the people began shifting from adoration to actual worship of these. And this is how idolatry began. This is what the Prophet explained. So from that, we can deduce that the prohibition, the primary prohibition of picture making is because of its relationship to idolatry. And this is factual. If you go around the world today to the various pagan systems in the world today, you'll see that they're all using images, whether it is images of animals or images of people or whatever. It is about worshipping images. So, yes? I'm going to go into the detail of that after. But we're just looking at it initially, how it was in the past. In the past, it was carvings, it was paintings, drawings, statues. These were the images. That's how they made images in the past. Okay? And it is on the basis of this that this has been prohibited in Islam. It has been prohibited in Islam. And why we don't have in our places of worship any images, and traditionally in Muslim homes and Muslim architecture, etc., images didn't play a role. Images of living beings didn't play a role. Trees, you know, our use of flowers and things like this in different designs, motifs, etc., were, you know, there was no objection. But where it came to animals, creatures, this was, there was a prohibition across the board. Now, in modern times, and this is also why you find if you go to a synagogue, which is the Jewish place of worship, the temple, they don't have any images of people or animals or anything. It's free of permission, perfect. And in fact, for many years after the time of Christ, the use of images in worship for Christians was prohibited. And it was, there was a particular period in time which they had what is known as the iconoclast movement, you know, where those who, there was a struggle between those who wanted to use images and against those who didn't. Eventually, the image, those who favored the use of religious images, won, and then they started using images of Christ on the cross, Mary, the saints, etc. It became a heavy, heavy focus on images, images in worship, you know, became a focus for worship in Christianity. But in the initial stages, it was prohibited for hundreds of years.
The reason behind these things is just to remind people, you know, because a person's nature is that he forgets only this, you know, like you listen only and you read, but you see, it makes you read more. But the thing is that people are not thinking as a Christian supports you to read. They are vocal. Like, when they want to pray or something, they just go to the picture and start praying, you know. They have to believe that this is the picture, this is the person that I'm watching, or something like that.
In Christianity, especially Catholics and others, it's widely used. They have pictures of Jesus, images of Jesus, and they worship at these images there.
And they go to the Catholic, they put some money for the school people and they start praying for whatever reason they have. So this is the main idea behind the thing, but people didn't use it the right way, or they didn't have it the same way.
The point of the matter is, well, eventually they won because the empress at the time supported those who were for use of images. That's why they won, not because their argument defeated the others, but because they had military might behind them and their movement became...
Just religious people like the Pope or the priest, or, I mean, the way he came to them, really comes... I'm ashamed of the Christian, the way they were praying to the Pope, and the way one of my friends here, they go to the mosque for the front of the...
Anyway, the issue of images, I mean, whatever people's intent are, you see, intent doesn't make something which is prohibited permissible. This is a mistaken approach that people take. If God prohibited this thing, We cannot come along and say, well, I have a good intention, if it's for this purpose and that purpose. No. Is it imperative? It is imperative. Finish. Now, what is presently an issue amongst Muslims, the Muslim world, is whether photography is included now in image making. This is what the issue is. Is our photograph only a technological advancement in the making of images, or are they in another category? Some scholars hold that it's just an extension. You see, in past times you did it with your hand, you drew it like this, now you press a button and you produce the same thing. You know, it's just such a technological advancement in the process of making images. You know, just like, for example, you know, you can design a computer program where you function and make an image on the computer, and then that image is transformed, you know, it can connect to a machine which can carve or can mold, and it will make an object just like what you made, you know, on the computer. Even though what you're putting in on the computer originally are just zeros and ones, you know, in the end it comes out with an image. So they judge it according to the end product is an image of a human being or an animal or whatever, and this is only the technological advancement. Other scholars, actually the majority, hold that it is in another category. It is more similar to mirrors, an image in a mirror. And even those who prohibit, for example, photographs, in general, they tend to permit television. They will permit the images which are portrayed on the television. But the fact of the matter is that these images, if they go on film, it's really still images that are run at a particular rate, which gives the illusion of movement. So in the end, it's all one. The issue is, what is happening in the process of making a photograph? That light is captured on paper, right? Treated with certain chemicals, etc. And the image which is there, the actual image, Tony, come on. The image which is actually there is passed through a lens, caught on the paper, and that image is produced. What is on the paper is what was out there, basically. And a copy of it. But the human hand is not directly involved in this process. Where a photograph is retouched, they use an airbrush. For example, take a picture for your passport picture, and they use an airbrush and they remove your pimples and dimples and things, and you know, now you're looking very smooth and you know, whatever. Then this becomes a painting. This becomes equivalent now to that painting, the drawing is similar. It's no longer in that other category. Now, the question arises, you know, why if in modern times people, even those who are actually making images, carvings, drawings, Picasso, you know, Rembrandt and people like this, why should we consider these things to be haram? Well, the fact of the matter is that, you see, people idolize them. The way that people look at it, you know, Leonardo da Vinci's Mona Lisa, I think, the way, no, they don't pray to it. They have, you know, worship can take many different forms. The point is that if you tell one of these art lovers, right, the average art lover, you tell them, listen, you know, the Louvre, the museum in France is going to burn down, right, you're in there, and there's this Mona Lisa, and there's a little baby, everybody's run out. You can only take one. Right? Which are you going to take? They'll tell you in a minute, I'll take the Mona Lisa. Why? Well, because baby, you can always get another baby. You can't get another Mona Lisa. True. It can be, and if it becomes that way with anything, then that love, that kind of love for that thing becomes forbidden love. And painting and drawing, these arts, they invite people to that. And if you listen to how the artists speak, what their goals are, they'll tell you, you know, I want to create something larger than life. They'll put it like this. Larger than life. What do you mean larger than life? Something greater than what actually exists. there is that desire in, on their part to, you know, to create, issue of creation. And it captures people, and it turns into adoration. So the point is that photographs, is for the majority of scholars who hold that photographs are permissible. They're fine as long as they're kept in a particular status, not of being elevated to adoration. Where they come up as posters now of your favorite pop star, you know, which you plaster on your wall, you know, and you idolize, then it becomes now forbidden. If you take photographs of your parents, you blow them up, stick them up on your wall, and you know, and they become fake images for adoration, then it's also forbidden. Adoration, to be adored, you know, people, oh, look at that, you know, oh, you know, this kind of attitude towards, huh? Yeah, yeah. What a nice picture, you know, what a nice picture. People come to your home, you want them to bring them over to look at it, you know. I'm telling you, according to Islamic law, to set it up on the wall, to put it up, to be seen, etc. According to Islamic law, this is prohibited. Because the adoration of these images leads ultimately to forms of worship. They become worship. If you look at the image of Khomeini, look at the image of Khomeini in Iran, where Khomeini's image is everywhere. It becomes an object of worship for the people. That is, but you see, one is taken to the final end. The point is that, in an Islamic perspective, things which will lead to it, you stop them. But you don't have to put it on the wall to see it. I mean, if you keep it in an album. Okay, hold on a minute please, people, how does this prevent the angels from coming in the home? Prophet Muhammad, may God peace and blessings upon him, has said that the angels will not enter homes in which there are images hung and dogs. There are images hung and dog. Well, I'm telling you what Prophet Muhammad said. Huh? I didn't know this. Who's saying this? Has nothing to do with prayer and not non-prayer. This is just with the Prophet. No. It didn't say that. It just said that angels, and this is, as they clarify, this is the angels of mercy, okay? These are angels of mercy that may accompany you. These angels will not enter the home where their images hung and dogs are kept. Okay? But angels that record your deeds, recording the deeds of your prayer, etc., they're with you. They're there. Okay, that's another issue. You want to talk about cats and dogs now? Okay, I will finish my images first before we go into another topic. Hold on a minute, please. I will finish my images. Okay. Okay. Ask a question on images, please. Go ahead. No, because these are not carvings of human beings or animals. But what has been specifically prohibited is living creatures, animals, and human beings. It's okay. Picture of the mountain, scenery, buildings, drawings of buildings, permissible. Yes. If it's in an album, it's out of the way, it's not given. No, it's set up. If it's set up with the thing behind it, propping it up, you know. It's a form of hanging it, it's a form of setting it up for visual. No, it's not an issue, it's not an issue. People, come on. We're going to discuss it. Let's go ahead. Be quiet, man. Yes. You're talking what I'm talking at. Yes.
I'm looking at you. I don't know
what you're saying. The point is in terms of images and worship. The issue is not for a person to say, I am not worshiping it, because, for example, I could say, okay, I want to get, you know, I went to the Far East, you know, when I was in Thailand or I was in Cambodia, and I found this beautiful statue of Buddha. Right? You know, Buddha, right? Buddha is the object of worship for the Buddhists, right? Beautiful. I really like it, so I'm going to bring it to my home, I'm keeping my home, not to worship it. It's not my intention to worship it, but it's just for decoration. As the statue of Buddha? No. 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 So the point, what I'm saying, try to understand the reasoning. I'm trying to give you a line of reasoning here, right? The point is that keeping that statue, this is an object of worship for other people. For you to keep it in your home for decoration is not acceptable. It's prohibited. Even though your intention is only decoration and not worship, that act is prohibited. So you don't use your intention to justify what has been prohibited. What has been prohibited is the hanging of images.
Yeah, but like the supernatural of things, like for example...
Hold on. So keeping toys is you shouldn't. You're not allowed to keep it. As a child, toys are allowed to you, you know, up until puberty. After that, finish. That permission is only given for children, for grown up to be young. No. As a child, playing with it, okay, it has purpose. Yeah. To keep them as decoration, etc., as an adult, it's not permissible. Huh? As an adult, no. No. If they're images, if it is a toy car, you know, the point is, it's just like, let me give you another example. Okay, just try to follow this, huh? I know you're having a difficult time with it. Yes? Just try to follow this. In the case of alcohol, okay, alcohol has been prohibited. Now, there are some people who drink alcohol, they get drunk, and they do all kinds of crimes. They come, you know, they cause accidents, they, you know, rape people, all kinds of stuff in the state of intoxication. But then there are some people who only take small amounts. They only drink, you know, for example, on Sunday with their Sunday meal, they just have a little glass of wine, you know, helps with their digestion. So they say, well, you know, why? Why are you going to prohibit it for us? We're not using it for these things. We don't get intoxicated with it. The point is that because of the harm that is involved in it, Islam has prohibited it right across the board. Okay? It's the same thing with images. Because how many people in this world today are involved in worshipping other than God on the basis of these images? This is how dangerous the images are. They take so much of mankind into hell. So the point is that this is why it has been prohibited, not by Islam, in the sense that Prophet Muhammad came and he prohibited, may God's discipline be upon him. By Islam, as understood to be the religion of Adam until today, yes. Prophet Moses, in his teaching, you know, 10,000 years ago, 15, 20,000 years ago, it was revealed that these images are prohibited. So believe that this is from God. There's a reason behind it. Whether you may have your own likes you know, I like this thing, you know, I feel, you know, I'm attracted to it, this is my habit, I get pleasure out of it. Hey, I mean, it's just about your pleasure, what you get pleasure out of, because if you're going to use that as your means of justifying what's right and wrong, then what about those other people in the society who get pleasure out of hurting other people, or, you know, harming them, etc.? Where do you draw the line? So the point is, the line has been drawn by God. If it's drawn by God, then you have to submit to it and accept that it is for the better. The betterment not only of you as an individual, but also of the society as a whole. It's the bottom line. Right. You got a chance now. You got a chance. Go ahead. Well, you know, in terms of that's a good example of, you know, but in the case of Syria, you should know in any case that half of Assad, you know, belongs to a group called the Nusayri. Yes. They follow another religion. Yeah, they're not Muslim. Yeah, they call them Alawiyin, it's a long name. But they're not Muslim. You know, they're the ruling family, you know, they're their clan, they rule and control Syria. The mass of Syrians, of course, are Sunni Muslims, the Orthodox Muslims. But Abd al-Assad and his clan, if you go and read about what is it they believe, they believe in a Trinity. They believe that Muhammad was God incarnate, so was Ali, he was God incarnate, and so was Salman al-Farisi. They have a Trinity that they worship. They believe Muhammad was God incarnate. So they got another religion. Huh? Maybe so. The term they use it loosely to govern a lot of different people. But the in Hafez Assad, he said their group, they're called the Mustaris, even the Shiites of Iran, the 12ers, the Ibn Ashriya, they from way back had declared the Alawiyin or the Nusayris to be heretical, to be outside even of Shiaism. It's only Khomeini who reaccepted them, linked up with them, you know, to the destruction of the Ikhwan Muslimun movement in Syria. He reaccepted them in the fold of Shiaism. But actually they've been declared as what they call the Ghulat al-Shia, the extreme branches of the Shiites, which the Shiites themselves consider to be non-Muslims.
Actually,
hold on. Somebody else over here. Go ahead. Forbidden. Yeah, it is forbidden. Yeah, of human beings. You know, the Pharaoh and all this, what does the Pharaoh represent? The Pharaoh represents idolatry. Yeah, and for you to take their symbol, it's forbidden in Islam. It's forbidden for you to take their symbol. You know, but what happens though? When you keep it as a souvenir, do you admire it? Yes, you do, right? You admire it. And what are you admiring? No, but you admire it. And what are you admiring here? You're admiring an image of... But you're admiring an image of paganism.
Sir.
It is.
Sir, you have something, but there is nothing in the world.
What? Okay, that image which has been created, it created that you created. The image which you have created is a composite of other images that you have seen. You cannot create what doesn't exist, what your mind is, what you have not seen with your eyes. This is what, when you as a painter, when you put something together, you're going to put it together from things you have seen. So you are creating an image here, an image built and pieces and parts of other parts of the living part of creation. It's imaginary. But you're involved with it. Hold on. People, let's take this one step. Let's take it one step at a time. Come on! The point you're raising, am I trying to convince you that everything that you're doing in your life is haram?
Yes.
No. This is that.